And what is your profession?
I am a registered nurse.
How long have you been a nurse?
I've been a nurse for 16 years.
What kind of education do you need to become a nurse?
To become a nurse, you need an associate degree as a minimum. And so I have an associate degree in nursing and applied science.
Where did you receive that?
Through St. Philip's College and then through Salt Lake Community College.
All right, so guys, we're just a little bit behind here on interpretation.
Oh, yes.
We are, sorry.
We're all saying the same thing.
Sorry.
Slow down a little.
You're fine. After you received that education, you received a license or a certificate, what else?
I did. I applied for and took an examination to be certified as a registered nurse.
And what does that mean to be a registered nurse?
It means that I have different higher skill level and different types of administrative duties and assessment duties that I would do in caring for a patient in the healthcare system.
Besides being a registered nurse, do you have any other type of training?
Yes, I do. I gained some training as a forensic nurse. And I gained that through an additional 40-hour class training. And then after that, a minimum of 40 hours clinical training to then understand the procedures and the process for collecting and maintaining forensic evidence, chain of evidence, custody, that type of thing.
And this forensic training, is that commonly referred to as SANE?
Yes.
And what does that stand for?
Sexual Assault Nurse Examiner.
You went through that type of training?
I did.
When was that?
In October of 2005.
After going through that training, what type of ongoing training did you receive?
I continue to stay current with our parent organization, the International Association of Forensic Nurses. We stay current with that. We also have journals and periodic articles that we do. They also have conferences. So every other year I attend International Association of Forensic Nursing Science and Practice Conference. So that's how we stay current on our skills and what's going on in the forensic field.
As part of that, do you read various literature, journal articles, so forth?
I do, on my own, and then also being a member of, I'm a member of Salt Lake Sexual Assault Nurse Examiners, so a team here in Salt Lake County does forensic exams. We have a requirement that we try and read a research article or an article current to our practice every month. And so, yes, I stay current with that.
As part of that ongoing training and so forth, do you undergo peer review?
Yes, we do.
What is peer review?
Peer review is where you have some of your, somebody who also is a nurse and is familiar with your field, who looks through your charting, your documentation, and helps you to assess and ensure that you are accurate with your information and that you haven't missed a detail that would be significant. We do that in all types of nursing, not just forensic nursing.
Does each of your assignments where you go out and perform forensic nursing tasks ultimately wind up being peer reviewed?
In my regular practice, is that what you're asking?
My
charts do get peer reviewed, every one of them.
Do you find this peer review to be helpful in your education as well as going back and looking at and observing various items?
Yes, and it's helpful because forensics changes, and so as we get updates or ways that we need to improve practice, it's nice to have a peer that's also saying, yes, this is what we need to do. Let's make sure we're moving forward in this direction and adequately documenting or charting things that we need to be doing.
I'm going to show you State Exhibit 151. Were you asked to examine an individual by the name of Isam
Yusuf? Yes.
And is that individual depicted here in this photograph exhibit 151?
Yes.
When did you examine him? What date was that?
I look at my notes. I'm very nervous. I'm sorry. Breathe.
Yes.
Thank you.
It was on. Water if you need it.
Thank you. It was on April 2nd of 2008.
At approximately
7 o'clock, 1900 hours.
7 p.m.
7 p.m.
Was your examination of the E-Cybernetics done pursuant to a search warrant?
Yes.
Do you recognize the individual that you examined on April 2nd here in the courtroom today?
Yes.
Could you point it out and identify what color is holding it?
With my finger?
Search.
Okay, so yellow shirt?
Would the record reflect identification?
Yes.
What were you requested to do as part of the search warrant?
On the search warrant, I had specific areas that I was asked to collect DNA evidence on. So by that, I mean a swab of some type, and then also do some photo documentation of body surfaces, draw a blood standard. So we use that for DNA identification. And so those were the things, an oral swab. Let me just start again. Make sure I have it all correct for you. So I had a hair sample, a blood draw. We collected oral samples, a penile swab, pubic combings. I did fingernail swabbings on both hands, and photographed the entire surface of the body.
Talk to me about how you went about to observe the surface of the body, document items, and then photograph.
So we have, with nursing, people change into a gown, and I'm able to keep them covered in the gown, but then move or kind of expose that area on the patient. So if it was an arm, I was able to look at the arm or lift the sleeve of the gown up, and then, again, take an arm out so I could look at the chest. And we try and keep people screened off and just look at one area at a time and give them some privacy.
I apologize, Jeff. We're just a little behind.
Okay. Sorry. Okay.
Do you take your time, or is this done quickly?
We take our time.
Do you recall about how long you spent examining the samples?
From the time that I arrived and was in Mr. Metz's presence until I handed over the forensic evidence in the kit to the law enforcement agent was 2 hours and 45 minutes.
Did you feel like you had sufficient opportunity to properly examine the surfaces of E-Cybernetics?
Yes.
Did you document that through photographs?
I did.
As well as your notes on what occurred?
On the photo documentation, I would just note size of injury, what I saw. I would identify that type of injury.
Then later on, you were asked to write a report with regards to what you saw.
Correct.
I'd like to show you some exhibits and ask you to explain what we're seeing and what you've done. Let's start first with the right shoulder. You indicated that you observed bruises to the right shoulder of the subject. We have State Exhibit 32 and 33. Could you describe what we're seeing in each of these exhibits?
Yes, on the.
And there is a laser pointer right
there. I shake a lot, I apologize. On this surface right here, this is the anterior surface of the body, so the front surface of the arm.
Okay, you're pointing to State Exhibit 33.
Correct. And what we're seeing there is there's some redness, and it's kind of mottled in appearance through that area. So what I'm seeing there is what we call a bruise. Bruising happens when some type of force is applied to your skin or your surfaces without breaking the skin, causing the capillary beds to then seep or hemorrhage. So that hemorrhagic bleeding is underneath the skin surface there and causes the coloration that we see. With hemorrhagic bleeding, with bleeding under the skin surfaces like that, it's not unusual to have a little bit of swelling. And so this was a little bit rounded in appearance and it had a swelling.
What does swelling indicate as to how soon or frequent or timing of when this injury might occur?
In regular healing, there's different processes or phases of healing that happen with all wounds. And the initial phase of that is called the inflammatory phase. And it usually starts with onset of the injury happening, and then it settles down within 4 or 5 hours. And then that swelling or that inflammation process usually concludes or starts to wind down and change into a second phase of healing about 3 to 5 days.
Is there a way to gauge bruising?
There is not.
So you can't look at a bruise and say, oh, that color means it's so many days.
No, the only thing that we can with some confidence say is that in the early or acute phase of an injury, that reddened appearance is more of that vascular, that capillary bed that's having that dilation, is having kind of ticked off right then. So it has an inflammatory response. So it's, I can say that's an early stage of healing, but again, that first phase can last from the initial onset of the injury up to 5 days.
Can you identify what we're looking at with stage 32?
Yes. So if you're looking at the front, so the anterior surface here, this would be the posterior or back surface of the arm and shoulder.
That same right shoulder arm?
Yes.
What do we see there?
There's just, it's very hard to see on this, to appreciate it, but there's a little bit of, it's similar in color, it's reddened, and it has a little bit of a mottled appearance, it wasn't swollen. But it was on the back arm. So again, it's that bruising that we see where the capillary bed is disrupted, has that little bit of hemorrhagic bleeding. And the reason of the mottled color is because force is applied at different pressures, so it can discolor, or can, and then with seeping, it can seep in different amounts too, causing that mottled appearance.
Let's move on to the next slide. The navel, right groin, and left hip redness that you documented starts first with state exhibit 34. What do we see here in state exhibit 34?
Okay. You can see I've got landmarks I've placed here for you with my rulers. And if we're looking at this, this is again the front surface of the body, the belly button area, umbilicus area, and then right here, again, it's hard to appreciate on this, there's just some redness. The other area on this photo that you can see is some redness, and it's more in a columnar kind of, it's more rectangle in shape, and it's just this redness right over here. And if that's your umbilical area and this is your hip, this is more toward the groin.
On state exhibit 35,
state exhibit 35 is just differentiating an additional one. There's a little rounded redness right here, and that's over kind of where your hip bone is, with redness or abrasions. Having a bony surface behind it does allow for that outer surface to have a little bit more force exerted to it, which can then lift or tear that skin. This wasn't torn, but this is red, so it's the same idea. Because it's prominent, it's over a hard surface, if something disrupts or hits it, it can cause that redness or irritation to that area.
What's the difference between redness and the bruise?
Okay, with redness, redness is usually caused, again, it's that capillary bed. So that capillary bed's that fun thing that we're always dealing with. And in this situation, some type of stimulus has happened to it, whether it's irritation, heat, medications, something topical, so something that could be applied to your skin. So again, that irritation or something that's absorbed through the skin that then causes the capillary bed to get a little ticked off again and show that redness. So it vasodilates, extra blood comes to that area and helps to make that redness appear.
You indicated that bruise has to deal with some type of blunt force trauma. Do we see, you mentioned redness from irritation, are we talking about blunt force trauma when we're talking about redness?
Not usually.
So it's more of an irritation or a rash? Or
right. It's the capillary dilation, something that has stimulated that to happen, whereas blunt force trauma, something is, a force is applied to that capillary bed, which then helps the capillary bed to disrupt and hemorrhage.
Let's move on to right thigh abrasion. First off, let's talk about what an abrasion is.
Okay. Okay, let me. So, let me show you again. It's harder to see on the screen, but there is a light area of redness right here. And it's very hard to see, but right through here, it's just this kind of area with an abrasion, if you're looking at this. And that's one of the nice things about peer review is we're able to use a very nice high graphic screen and look at our pictures and actually examine the detail better. But what I was seeing here before any of the camera review was lifting or feathering of that epidermis, that outer dead cell layer of our skin. With an abrasion, something forces applied again and it lifts or tears that outer layer without going deeper or breaking down further into further tissues. So it lifts or tears that outer surface off.
When you talk about feathering, we're talking about feathering of the skin.
Correct. So these cells, it's hard to see, but these cells are a little bit lifted and feathered in that area, causing that abrasion.
How is abrasions caused then?
Abrasion is caused by force that's applied to that skin surface that can disrupt that outer epithelial layer.
More of a kind of plain friction.
Yes, friction. Yes.
As opposed to a bruise where you have an impact.
Correct. Where force is applied, yes.
And for the record, we're referring now to State Exhibit 36 and 37. With regards to this abrasion that you saw in rank 5, what was the size of this abrasion?
That abrasion measured 3.5 centimeters by 3 centimeters. So what I'm looking at here, when I say 3.5, it's extending this direction. So it's a little bit wider on the bottom here with that feathering of the tissue, and then this direction is the 3.
Was this particular event consistent with a single type of abrasion or multiple scratches or abrasion?
This looked like it was a single occurrence. The force was applied to that skin and lifted it all at that same time.
From your observations and from the photograph that you analyzed for peer review, would this be consistent with a scraping such as a fingernail?
Yes, that's possible.
How likely would this injury be achieved if the person had on underwear and Levi's?
It's less likely because you have protective covering, because again, that force is applied to that epithelial layer, which lifts and tears it. But at the same time, your skin or your cloth can also be a force that helps provide friction that can lift. It's not as likely, but it is a possibility that old areas can have a little bit of an abrasion too.
And with regards to this injury, could this have been sustained within approximately 2 to 3 days?
Yes, following those guidelines of that inflammatory process, this does follow that inflammatory process with having it occur within 3 to 5 days. Onset of injury to 5 days.
What about the feathering of skin? Would you see the feathering of skin had the injury occurred longer than that?
As we go about our day and are wearing clothing or shower, that lighter epithelial layer would potentially be washed or disrupted off. And so it's likely in that acute phase, that early phase, that you would see more of the tissue, the little skin tags hanging still, than later.
Let's move on to the right cap avulsion. What is an avulsion?
Okay, so we've been talking about bruises and abrasions. Those are all types of blunt force injury. There's a third category, which is this avulsion type of an injury. So before, when I talked about an abrasion where it disrupts that outer layer, it's usually only what we call a thin layer. It's the outside epidermis layer. It's not split thickness, multiple layers. With an avulsion, multiple layers of tissue have been disrupted. And it pierces through much further. And then usually what happens is, it's hard to tell here, but you can see that some type of force pierced through the skin, and then that skin was moved. And then the body, as it's trying to repair that flap, lays down the collagen, the fibrin, and things that are helping to form that scab and clot. And then that redness is the area where the skin was moved or torn off of, but it's kind of gathered up and it's included in the scab here. So it's like taking your glove and moving your glove. You can kind of change or make the appearance different, and it can bunch up, and that's basically what happens. Something pierced, disrupted that skin, and then helped to bunch it up at the other corner. And the body was ready to heal, so it started healing.
We're referring to stages of 38-39, and it's referring to this right calf avulsion.
Correct.
You indicated that an avulsion is different than an abrasion. Is it in the same type of category as
they're considered blunt trauma injuries, blunt force injuries, or friction had to be applied, so some type of force, friction. So they're in the same category, but they're just further defined from each other.
And the avulsion has to deal with kind of the scooping deeper into the skin.
Correct. It pierces more than just the epidermis. It gets to another skin level and then can break or separate that.
Do avulsions require a longer time to heal?
Generally.
Why is that?
Because, again, in that inflammatory process, a lot of times if our skin is still intact, that's our best defense, and our body will form a clot, or it will put plasma in the area, which helps to form or create that scabbing, that seal. If it's not there, then it's a little bit harder. The body has to first stop bleeding to the area, and then as that's done through platelets and things that are cascade to the area to try and help solve that, then now it still has to repair or lay epidermis over that. It has to lay those skin cells back down. So it does take longer to heal.
Do you recall the size of this particular injury that we see more clearly in stage two?
Yes. And you can see my ruler here, but it's... And what I'm counting here is I'm counting 5 centimeters destruction and 4 millimeters. Sorry, I said it wrong. 5 millimeters and 4 millimeters. What I'm including in here is these edges that are puckering too. That's part of that inflammatory response in the body healing. So I included that, but that's what I've measured is 5 millimeters by 4 millimeters.
Is this type of injury consistent with someone using a fingernail to claw out the skin?
That's likely.
Why is that? Your conclusion.
Again, a fingernail can apply that direct force, and it's got an edge on it, so it could puncture through another layer, and then it could be the vehicle which could then move or transpose that top layer of tissue back, exposing that underlying tissue.
From your experience and measurement of various bodies that you go through your practice, what is the average size of the adult fingernail?
I honestly have never measured an adult fingernail. I apologize, I have not done that.
Well, what about a child-sized fingernail? So are they going to be smaller than an adult fingernail?
They will be smaller.
Is this possible that this injury could have been sustained within 2 to 3 days from the
examination? It's congruent with that inflammatory, that first phase of healing that I told you about. The body's trying to form hemostasis or block off that bleeding. And then lots of stuff floods to that area, white blood cells, red blood cells to help repair it, platelets to help form that scabbing and clotting, and then fibrogen and other collagen things that will help to then create that skin layer again. So yes, that happens, that inflammatory phase is that 3 to 5 days.
This type...
Sorry.
This type of injury, does it lead in the initial stages?
Yes. Because it disrupts it down to that capillary bed. So rather than just putting pressure on that capillary bed and then causing it to burst or rupture, it actually cuts through and is exposing parts of that capillary bed.
Let's move to State Exhibit 40 and 41, which is a left chest avulsion. What can you tell us about this particular injury?
So again, like I had mentioned to you, split You can see it's right here and then it's here. It's a little bit of a right angle appearance to it. Something had to be applied with enough force or pressure to disrupt that epithelial layer and then move down further in the skin surfaces to then reach the capillary bed and then disrupt or move that tissue to the side. So what had happened here is this area is a little bit more reddened and raw and exposed, and then bunched up here is some of that flap that had been moved. And because the body's in that inflammatory process, it's incorporating that tissue and the little bit of blood and stuff that's coming platelets to form that scabbing that we see on that avulsion injury.
I'd like you to look directly at State Exhibit 40, and could you point out where the sternum is in relationship to that injury?
Yes. So this right here is our sternum.
You pointed to the left side of that exhibit.
Photo? Yes.
And where is the injury in relationship to the sternum?
So it's between midline is what we call the sternum, midline, and it's over lateral, but it's not, it has not passed the nipple, the left nipple. So we would call it more of a medial, but it's still chest, and it's medial chest.
With regards to this particular avulsion, would this injury that you saw in its initial stage exude blood?
Yes.
To what extent would it bleed? How profuse?
No, our bodies are amazing. It might have just been a small amount, but there would have been some. It broke through the capillary bed, and so bleeding did happen of some type. I can't quantify. I don't know how else I would explain that for you.
Would there be sufficient amount that it might transfer to a T-shirt that was on the person?
Yes. If there was something overlying it, yes, it's possible that could happen.
In relationship to the prior right calf avulsion that we see in Exhibit 38-39 and the left chest avulsion that we see in Exhibit 40-41, is there any way that you can determine whether or not these two particular injuries were contemporaneous with each other?
Occurring at the same time?
Correct.
The only evidence or information I can give you is that I'm seeing similar characteristics in both wound beds. So I'm seeing the injury, I'm seeing the similar stage in the clot, and then what I'm seeing, this puckering that I talked about, it's really hard to see, but there's puckering is the body's attempt to repair and heal that, and I saw the same types of injuries with both avulsions. I mean, same type of response from the puckering of the skin.
With regards to the right calf avulsion, you indicate that it's consistent with potentially occurring within 2 to 3 days from when you observe. Is that the same with regards to this left chest avulsion?
Yes.
Additionally, would it be consistent with an injury caused by a scraping or a clawing of the finger?
Yes.
On this injury, what was the size that you measured on the avulsion?
And this is the left chest, right?
The left chest.
Again, this was 5 millimeters, 4 millimeters. So 5 millimeters, 4 millimeters. And then I had also put a second 7 millimeters, and what I included in that is this puckering area. So that's also an area of healing that was evident.
That same 5 to 4 millimeters is consistent with the right calf avulsion, which was 5 to 4 millimeters.
Correct. Same size.
Does that also go into your determination that they were contemporaneous because the healing is the same, the size was the same, you're seeing the same types or similarities in color and so forth?
I think that's fair to say, yes.
Now move on to the upper left inner thigh of Raven, found in State Exhibit 43 and 42. What are we looking at? It's kind of hard. You're close up, and it's kind of hard to see. What part of the body are we looking at?
This is the anterior surface, but as if your knee was moved out to the side, inner thigh area.
With the laser pointer, could you identify where we're looking?
Yes. So this is more of a right angle to this picture. In this picture, this would be the knee. This is moving toward the hip. So this would be where we articulate that joint, you know, that bend we have there in our groin.
In State Exhibit 42, this yellow clothing cloth, is that covering the groin area?
Yes.
And where are we looking at in particular with regards to this injury? Where did it happen?
So you can see my ruler a little bit, and you can see in both pictures. I'll start with 42. You can see that the injury that I'm looking at is right there. And then this is a little bit closer of that injury, and it's turned on its side. So you see one this direction, the other one's kind of a 90. So that's how that is laying.
This injury, does it occur in the inside of the thigh then?
It's on the inner surface, yes.
You said it's an abrasion. Can you tell us again what an abrasion is?
An abrasion is where force or friction is in contact with our outer layer of skin that then lifts or disrupts the epidermis layer.
Now referring to State Exhibit 43, how many abrasions do we see here?
You can see that there is one, and then two, and three. And they're almost equidistant. They're both reddened, equidistant, and in that track that they're kind of that column that they're running down, you can see that's where some of that feathering or that epidermis layer has been disrupted.
Just as the prior abrasion, you said that there's feathering. You saw feathering in this particular location.
Yes, there was little bits of skin that were just lifted, yes.
Based on that feathering and what you're looking at, is it consistent that this type of injury could have occurred within 2 days?
Yes.
From when you were examined.
Yes.
What was the size of this abrasion?
The size. Let me make sure I get the right size for you. So I know I've got it. So what I had done is I measured these. Each of these was very, very skinny. So that length was 1 to 2 millimeters in length. And then the length of them themselves would have been 5 millimeters. Am I getting that right? Like I said, I'm very nervous. So what I had done is, like I said, I measured diameter. So that's the 1 to 2 millimeters on those running up and down. And then I am incorrect. It was 12 millimeters in length. So this length right here is what I was measuring there.
So these three streaks here are 12 millimeters kind of in a streaking fashion. And the distance between each of those is how wide?
I didn't measure the distance between, but there's they're pretty much parallel with each other, the three columns of injury, that abrasion that you see.
And looking at this particular chart, you've got a scale there. Are you able to determine the distance between each of those lines, approximately. Maybe I can show you the actual exhibit. I'll show you State Exhibit 43.
Yes, it's the. So let me show you what I'm seeing. There's a. Point to my own eye. This right here, this distance right here. Sorry, I'm really shaky. It's 4 millimeters, and then this is 5 millimeters.
Would you expect this type of injury to occur if it was covered by clothing such as the
overtension?
It's not as likely.
Why is that?
Again, the inner part of our thigh, I'd be more inclined to believe that would happen on the outer part of the surface, where again, more force can come in contact with that. You have to kind of move your leg out and have it be to the side for that inner area to then have that contact or that force placed on it.
With regards to this, would this type of injury be consistent with fingernails scraping across the skin?
Yes.
Would this be consistent with a smaller type of hand, such as a child's hand, as opposed to an adult hand?
I don't do very much peds, but measuring the distance, it's smaller than what I would think an adult spread would be, and so I feel like we could say that, but I don't have a ton of experience with pediatrics.
And when you're referring to the spread, you're talking about the spread of one finger to
the distance, correct.
I'm not sure I asked this, but let me ask it again. Is this consistent with an injury occurring within the last 2 to 3 days of the injury?
Right. Following that initial phase of healing, that inflammatory response, this is consistent with that first 3 to 5 days.
Let's move on to state exhibit 44 and 45. What do we see in these two exhibits?
You are seeing... We're seeing bruising modeling right through here. And that's where we're looking right here. And that's again on that inner aspect of the thigh.
Abrasion or bruising that you're seeing there, what is that consistent? How did it occur?
It's a blunt force trauma injury. So some type of blunt force had to be extended over that skin surface, which then disrupted and broke that capillary bed, causing that capillary bed to seep or bleed into those tissues.
You mentioned previously that pressure is sometimes unable to cause that bruising. What do you mean by?
If you look at this appearance here, you can see it's a little bit thicker, darker here. It's a little more scant through here. So again, like I said, force being applied to that area can disrupt or break, because that blunt force can break that. And then as it bleeds, it can spread out, or it can model, or it can kind of diffuse into that tissue, causing that type of an injury.
You mentioned also that there was some abrasion that we saw here. What was it? Was it abrasion?
And that this is a combination of that other photo that you just saw, but right up here, it's right up here is where those three linear. You can see the knees extended up and out, so it's that inner aspect of that left thigh.
Again, would you expect or see this type of injury to clothing?
Blunt force could be applied over clothing, but it's in, a different area of the body that normally you knock knees, you knock the anterior surface of your skin. This is the inner area of that thigh.
Such as somebody maybe hitting against it?
That would be a force that could be applied.
These various avulsions. on the left chest, and then on the right calf that we see in States Exhibit 38, 39, and 40 and 41. These types of injuries, is it, we talked about clothing being on and off for the abrasions. What about avulsions? Would you more likely see an avulsion with somebody having like a Levi coat or a t-shirt on to get this type of avulsion, or would it be when there is no clothing?
All I can really tell you is that force could have been applied. I have ER experience, things like that. I have patients who come in with clothing and unclothed that have similar type of avulsion injuries.
So those could have happened whether or not there was clothing.
Yes.
But it is consistent with a fingernail type of scrape or scraping. No further questions.